And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am Chip Patterson, joined, as I frequently am, by Mr. Tom Fornelli, coming from Chicago. Tom, we are here to, I guess, celebrate. It's not as much of a holiday as much as it is a mark, but we are here on this Monday early afternoon, 100 or 101 days from the beginning of the college football season, and it's sort of the light at the end of the tunnel, right?
You know, you mentioned I am in Chicago, and we are about 100 days away from the college football season, yet on Friday in the Chicagoland area, if you lived out in one of the far western burbs, you woke up to snow on your lawn.
Snow?
Yeah, it melted by the afternoon, but you woke up that morning and there was snow on your grass.
May 16th. Yeah, I was going to say, that's not very mid-May at all.
No. So, yeah, college football could hurry the hell up, but if summer wants to get here a little before that, that would be okay, too.
We have, of course, since the last time we joined you, the spring practice is wrapped. We're sort of moving into watch list season. The Remington Award watch list came out. 62 centers. If you're doing the math, that is a little less than half of the projected starting centers for the fall, all on the watch list. And where do you stand on this? Are you in a, well, good for them, you know, centers need some love too? Or do you think that the whole watch list bubble has burst and now it's kind of ridiculous?
Watch lists are just hilarious to me in general. They might as well have literally named every single projected starting center on the watch list, because shouldn't that be who is actually eligible for the award anyway?
Yeah.
But I'm fine with centers getting attention, but what I really want to do is I want to be in the room with the Remington Award people when they're like cutting down the list. I want to see what actually goes into it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I want to see if it's just like the video game and it's like, this center is a senior on the team with a lot of rushing yards. Therefore, he is the best center in the country. Or I want to see if there's actually people in there breaking down offensive line play. Like, hey, look at this guy, you know, on his blocks. Look at him get down and drive these defensive tackles. This is a good center. I bet it's the former.
This is what I guess. I think that there is probably a 21, 20, or 22-year-old that probably just started a summer internship with one of these award groups. And the bosses said, all right, intern, we're going to need you to watch all of this game film and all of these offensive line cut-ups. Then they went to their Xbox, turned it on, and said, oh, here's a senior on this team with a lot of rushing yards. You know, and just fill it out and turn it in.
I think one of the unintended consequences of the NCAA football video game franchise being discontinued is it's going to be a lot harder for these watch lists to figure out who's good.
Just
because, you know, they, like you said, there was some intern going, well, this dude's like a 97 on NCAA, so he should definitely be a finalist.
That was the worst. I think that maybe you and I both started for the 2010 season, right?
Yeah, right after the last World Cup.
I think that I prepared, not actually prepared, but I remember there were like five players that before that season, I was like, you know what, I'm going to go look at the NCAA rankings and try and take notes on these guys. But I think that, one of them was probably Garrett Gilbert or someone like that, didn't exactly pan out. And I quickly abandoned that strategy of season prep.
You know, I take that crap way too seriously when I do it.
The NCAA football video game?
No, but like, you know, since joining the FWAA and having the chance, you know, to actually vote for some of these awards, I take it way too seriously. I sit there, you know, I try to break things down. Like, I think about how much time other people are spending, like, you know, on All-America teams and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, where it
really is. Compared to how I'm actually sitting down, like, trying to figure this out, and I feel like I'm the actual idiot in this equation, not anybody else.
It's like that helpless thing where you put in all those hours and then realize that maybe 65 to 75% of the ballots were filled out with about the same discretion as, like, the coaches' bowl.
Yeah, meanwhile, I'm trying to break down, ooh, the second or third best guard in the country.
Yeah, because in reality, you could make an argument. I mean, there's probably like tiers, you know, like at some point you take a step down, but there could be like five players that could make an argument for positions like that.
and I want to get the best guy on there. I don't want it just to be the name. And I think it's all for naught, I think, in the end.
Well, speaking of just sort of, you know, randomly trying to pick out things that matter, Tom, in part of this 100-item sort of post that we put together at CBSSports.com, I likely have left some stuff out. So Tom's going to help me either say thumbs up, yes, you have identified 100 items that will be relevant and exciting about the 2014 season, or he will say you've missed out on some big ones. So we'll just quickly run through this, maybe section by section, see how it plays out. I'll start with the stories, which is where we led. I think that adjusting to the college football playoff era will be something that happens for coaches, something they can't really control now, but will control the scheduling. It will be very, very interesting to see how fans react, and then just sort of the sport in general as we move to this what will impress the committee sort of discussion rather than what will help the computers. Do you think that this will be a big deal or just something that comes along with change?
I think it'll be a huge deal. I mean, especially in the first year of it, it's something, you know, that a lot of college football fans have demanded for a long time now. So there's going to be a lot of attention paid to it now that it's actually here. And I think the only real difference is, like you say, we're going to go from some computer spitting out numbers to a committee picking teams. And I think it makes it better because, you know, you can get angry at a computer, but you're just yelling at a machine.
Right.
And even though they're programmed by people, you're still yelling at a machine. Now we have people we can get pissed off at.
Like individuals that we know their faces. It's Jeff Long,
like,
it's Condoleezza
Rice.
Yeah, like
I can say, Barry Alvarez, what the F are you doing? You know what I mean?
And oh, yeah.
I think that adds a whole new level to it that kind of will enhance the product. Because I think if there's anything college football fans like more than college football, it's getting mad at people for having different opinions about college football.
Another place where a lot of attention will be drawn is Jameis Winston. And my prediction here for this season, it's could be good in terms of Florida State and wanting to attract attention. But I think that Jameis Winston's star is so big that he will have sort of that negative effect where Johnny Manziel last year, I mean, every single twist and turn of his summer, of his preseason, the attention was insane. It probably hit its peak, hit critical mass at SEC Media Days. So we still have a lot to see as far as Jameis Winston goes, but I imagine it will be tough and slightly unbearable for the normal college football fan who, like, we recognize that Winston is a phenomenal talent and it's awesome to see what he was able to do last year and he's great on the field, but that's going to be the new Johnny Football in terms of the coverage is just going to be beaten over and over and over again.
And let's even just take off the off-field stuff, you know, the things that happened during the offseason, you know, the investigations. Even if you take that out of it and just look at it as a football player, he can't win.
Yeah.
Because look at Manziel last year. Manziel's season last year was not bad. The A&M didn't have, you know, as many wins as it did, but Manziel played fine. In fact, you know, he's pretty much played on par with what he did when he won the Heisman. It's just, I feel like the way it's reacted to in general is, you know, when it's new, it's really exciting. But now for Winston this year, he's going to go through the same stuff Manziel did where we've already seen it. So even if he's still being amazing and doing awesome things out there, people are going to be like, well, we've already seen it. We need the next new thing. And Jameis Winston, even if he's awesome and Florida State wins another national title, it's going to get pushed to the side a little bit. And then you add in all the off-field stuff and all the attention, and every single thing he does is going to be a story, just like with Manziel. And yeah, it is. We are going to hate Jameis Winston by the end of the year, and it won't be his fault.
Right. It won't be. I mean, and this is, it all seems to be playing out exactly the same because you've got tremendous on-field stuff. Then you've got some off-field concerns. Some of the off-field concerns are a very, very serious issues. Some of the off-field issues are no big deal at all. And you know, there's a little bit of both with Manziel, and there was a lot of both with Winston. You know, as someone who really enjoyed watching him play, I hope that we're able to stay to the on-field stories, but I'm positive that we won't.
And then we could fast forward to next spring during the NFL draft countdown, where Jameis Winston is clearly the best quarterback in the draft, but some dude from some minor college will go first because scouts are stupid.
Yeah, he'll slip and fall, and we'll spend the entire draft night talking about where he's falling to.
Well, actually, I don't think Winston goes out of the top 10, but just, you know.
I mean, so Jimbo Fisher has frequently said he will not be surprised if Winston stays for even another season. And part of the thinking is that he really might want to try and go Bo Jackson and continue to play baseball and play in the NFL and major leagues. And
honestly,
I don't know if he could, I don't know if it's possible to take two straight years of this TMZ style attention.
Honestly, if I'm Jameis Winston, this is going a little off subject here, but if I'm Jameis Winston and I can play baseball professionally, I'm choosing baseball over football.
Just for your, like, the health of your body and
for
everything.
The health of your body and the money. Because look at how much draft picks make, you know, when they first enter the league in the NFL. And remember, that's not all guaranteed. And secondly, and then you look at how much, you know, draft picks make in baseball. You know, you look at kids in the major leagues now who've literally been in the major leagues for less than a year. They came up through the minors, got there, and they're signing $60 million extensions because teams are trying to buy out their arbitration and free agent years. In the NFL, you're not getting near $60 million in your first season. You're not coming close. It might take you a decade to actually get there with the way those contracts actually work. So if I'm Jameis Winston and I could play baseball and a major league team is genuinely interested in me, I'm taking baseball.
Let's see. We got the hurry up, no huddle was another item that I sort of had as a story that will be interesting to watch. The 10-second rule proposal was obviously shot down, but I think the debate is going to be prevalent throughout the season, particularly as more teams start to try out their own version of a hurry-up, no-huddle offense, which isn't necessarily always up-tempo, but as much as using pace kind of as a weapon. Are you in the camp that maybe this is the next evolution of the game, or do you think that, like a lot of coaches who believe, you know, football is just cyclical, that, you know, things will eventually start swinging back to where you look at Stanford, you look at even, you know, Michigan State a little bit, and the style will sort of shift back in the other direction.
Yeah, no, I don't know if this word's right word to use, because I think if I say it, people will take it as an insult, but I see it as a phase.
Yeah.
And it is, because, like, if you look at it, the reason that these hurry up, no huddle offenses came into vogue was because these were teams with less talent than, you know, the major teams like the Alabamas who were running all these pro styles. And these coaches were devising ways to beat these teams if you don't have the same amount of talent. And you can't just line up and, you know, run the ball at them. These were ways to spread the field, spread the defenses, and just get an advantage by wearing the defenses down. And eventually, the more popular this offense becomes, some coach somewhere is going to devise a system to beat a team running this with less talent than the teams. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, like you said, you know, you mentioned Stanford and Michigan State. These teams are winning all of a sudden in an era where the spread is becoming prevalent by sticking to an older school pro style offense and just, you know, beating people up. And I don't know if that's going to be what's next. I hope not, because I understand, you know, it's not as fun to watch, obviously, but I think this hurry up is a phase. Yes.
You like violence. You don't have to hide behind that.
I do like violence. I just, you know, it's,
you don't want to endorse it.
I don't want anybody getting hurt from the violence, but I enjoy the violence. And yes. I know that's a very hypocritical stance to take, but I'm just being honest.
Yes, just be honest. Will Muschamp, I think Florida Gators are a week by week. The national spotlight will be on them. I called it Muschamp's mulligan. Last year's woes really the blame was put on, number one, injuries, which they could not control, and number two, the offensive struggles. And the reaction to that is a change. Brent Pease is gone. In comes Kurt Roper from David Cutcliffe's staff at Duke. Roper's promising a more exciting brand of the Gators offense. I still think they need some skill position players, particularly on the outside. But this is the University of Florida, and this is now a week by week. We're going to be checking the temperature of the Gators. Are they contending in the SEC East? You know, are they going to be able to accomplish even more than that? It's not necessarily fair to Will Muschamp. I just think it's one of the biggest stories for all of college football heading into the fall.
I want to see an offensive coordinator's introductory press conference where he promises to run a slower, more boring offense.
Yeah. We are not going to be multiple. We're going to be very predictable.
We're going to run one freaking formation. That's it. We got three plays. We're going to run left, run right, and run up the middle. That's it.
That's like the old like Super Nintendo football games where you just get to choose like from three plays.
These kids are inundated with school. I am not trying to confuse them with anything complicated. Just very basic, nothing special. Three plays, learn them. Let's go do it. No, I think Muschamp's position at Florida will be, you know, a big story this season. It was last year, but I don't think this year can go as bad as last year did, because you mentioned the injuries, and the injuries that Florida suffered last year were just, it was almost comical how many people were getting hurt and how often on that team. And that simply can't happen again this year. Just the mathematical probability of it, that team has to improve.
FBS teams have 85 scholarship players, and they lost 26 of them to injuries throughout the season, 19 of them being starters or primary contributors.
It's over a quarter of their scholarship players.
One out of every four of you is going to be hurt this year and miss at least one game.
I mean, imagine if the NCAA penalized a team by taking away 25 scholarships. That's what Florida was dealing with last year.
Yeah.
And it was during the middle of the year before it had time to replace any of these people.
Rolling sanctions placed upon Florida by the football gods. What did they do?
Only Will Muschamp knows.
Urban Meyer entering year three at Ohio State. I think that we've already moved on, clearly, but I think that you and I even talked about this on this podcast during last season. 24-0 is really, really impressive.
Yeah, and nobody cares anymore because they lost the last two.
Yeah, and
they're on a two-game losing streak, so that 24-0 doesn't matter. It's the two-game losing streak to, you know, the team that won the Rose Bowl and a Clemson team. That two-game losing streak in the minds of many fans completely outweighs the fact that they won 24 straight before it.
Unbelievable. I mean,
they sucked the whole time.
I think that the Buckeyes will, especially getting Braxton Miller back, you know, if you want to believe the stories and sort of the sound bites that came from Columbus during the spring, there's sort of a big movement to help make Miller develop a little bit more. What was a Gruden style setup that Urban Meyer was running with Braxton Miller, where they would sit down and break down tape and probably talk about the ZY banana a whole bunch? But, you know, my takeaway from that is if Braxton Miller really does take another step forward, and if the defense can fix a lot of its issues, particularly on the back end and pass defense, then, there's absolutely no reason to think that Ohio State won't be right back in the same position at the end of the regular season this year.
Just keep him healthy.
Yeah.
I mean,
Braxton?
Yeah, you don't want him to not be himself, but at the same time, I would kind of, if I'm Urban Meyer, I'm kind of encouraging him not to run as often, or at least not calling in as many designed runs.
Yeah.
Because if you watch an Ohio State game at least once a game, Braxton Miller is down on the field after a play and needs to be looked at by trainers. Now, they're not always, you know, they're not always serious injuries. He usually comes back, but it's like, I don't know if the more I see that, the more it's like, all right, you know, maybe just let him hang back in the pocket and hand off. Maybe just let him throw some more.
Please. No, I'm with you. I would love to see that. Braxton Miller, it will be one of the Heisman favorites. And after the stories, we've got a whole bunch of players to watch.
Can I just add one story that you missed that I think
–
I wouldn't say you missed it.
Absolutely.
But I think it's something that could come back. I think we're going to see more expansion stuff this year.
Oh, no. You do?
I honestly do, because you look at the way the schedules have been working – and, you know, ACC is sticking at, you know, eight, SEC is sticking at eight games, and they want to schedule one, you know, you have to schedule the one Power Five conference and all that. But still, now you look at, you know, the Big 12 sitting at 10 teams. I feel like the Big 12 is going to feel the need to expand soon. I think that could happen this year, just because I think it's going to be harder and harder to fill non-conference schedules.
You think they go Mountain West?
Yeah, especially not that too, because look at BYU, who went independent and now is being told that it doesn't count as a Power Five school.
Yeah, they're going to want a conference.
So I think BYU is going to reevaluate its position as an independent, because it's going to have a much harder time filling out 12-game schedules if the Power Conference teams don't consider it to be a powerful, you know, schedule opponent. So I think BYU could be pushing to add the Big 12, and maybe then the Big 12 takes, you know, a UConn or Cincinnati from the American.
I just hope that we don't move to 16, not because of any, I mean, not because of any general like cause and effect, but just because we've seen with the 14 team conferences how infrequently teams play each other.
Yeah, and then also I think too, because Nick Saban mentioned it, and generally when Saban starts talking about things, they actually get consideration, whether they come to fruition or not. Not always the case, but Saban's been talking lately about how he thinks that the Power Five conferences should only play Power Five conferences, which to me, I don't know if that's going to happen as far as the schedule, but I think I get the sense that we're going to hear more about those conferences breaking off on their own.
Oh.
Because the battle between, you know, the quote unquote pay for play is not going to die. And the smaller schools are going to keep crying poor, and the bigger schools are going to want to do it. So maybe the NCAA comes up with separate rules for the different conferences, but I think we're going to hear a lot about those five conferences just breaking off and establishing their own quote unquote league.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's scary. I thought we had dodged that. I thought we had survived.
I think it got tabled. I don't think it's ever been dodged. I think it's going to be back again as a topic.
Well, Jim Delaney does say that he anticipates all of these changes are going to essentially be 5 to 7 years of litigation. There's not going to be any way for us to flip a switch and be in this new era. It will be a painful process, and I hope you've been studying up on your inside business Bloomberg-style reporting.
No.
Because that's what we'll be doing.
I'm telling you now, folks, if you're reading a post about me or by me on this stuff, I am literally just reading Wikipedia and going from there. I don't know crap about this stuff.
I
don't really want to either.
Well, no, that's not true. You and I both reach out to Dennis a lot.
Yeah,
and he's
yeah, but
Dennis. No, I get Dennis to sort of translate athletic director speak. I need to sort of like run it through him as a translator. Then he can say, "All right, here's what's going on."
I mean more like the union lingo.
Oh, yeah. I don't get that.
I have never envied any of our colleagues in the professional sports whose sports are on strike and have to go through all the collective bargaining type jargon to learn about this stuff. I did not envy them, and I do not plan on having to learn it.
Yeah, definitely not. Let's see. Heisman front runners, according to the odds makers, you got Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Braxton Miller, Bryce Petty, Todd Gurley, Brett Hundley, TJ Yeldon, Everett Golson, Nick Marshall. I don't like trying to choose a particular Heisman front runner, but is there any other player that you would add to that group? Because I had to draw a line somewhere and say, okay, after Nick Marshall, I think we're talking about some pretty legitimate long shots.
Yeah, I think the names you've listed are pretty much the better bets, but at the same time, somebody usually comes out of nowhere.
Oh, as the last two have.
Well, Jameis didn't really come out of nowhere.
I think
we kind of all knew who he was. But I saw earlier, I can't remember what the odds were on him, but when Bovada originally released these odds and I was looking, you know, long term, I was thinking for just values. And I felt like Dak Prescott was an awesome value. He was like 25-1. And he's just a pet favorite of mine, Mississippi State's quarterback.
Right.
I just really enjoyed him. And there was somebody else whose name completely escapes who it was right now. But I look at that. They've got Everett Golson listed at 14-1. I don't even know that I can guarantee you Everett Golson will be Notre Dame's starting quarterback come that first game of the year.
So you're on Malik Zaire, huh?
From everything I've read, I mean, it could be that Golson was just rusty getting back, you know, after missing the year this spring. But from people I've talked to and things that I've read, Malik Zaire has been the more impressive quarterback in that camp.
Interesting.
So,
all right. So we've got another, 15 to 34. We've got another 20 players on the 100 things of players to watch. Any players that I might have missed or any ones from that list that you really like and are excited about?
I'm thrilled that you put Shalik Calhoun on there.
Absolutely.
Because I feel like he's sort of an unknown, even though he's been really good for a few years now, and he's on a very good defense. So I was thrilled you put him on there. You've got a lot of Michigan State guys on there. You got Connor Cook on there too. And I think Duke Johnson, I'm hoping, comes back from that injury. You know, I hated when he got hurt because he's awesome. Miles Jack is awesome. Tyler Lockett, I think, is one of the more underappreciated players in the country, considering he ever does for Kansas State. So I'm happy you put him on there. And as far as people that I think you missed, no, not that I could see. I mean, these are the type of names I'd be going for. And somebody, like we mentioned with the Heisman, somebody will leap up out of nowhere and surprise us all.
Yeah. But
I think this is a pretty solid list you got here.
What coach in a new job are you most intrigued by? Not necessarily the one you think that will be the most successful, but what sort of first-year coach is the story that you're looking forward to following?
I think the obvious ones for me are just Charlie Strong at Texas, because it's the first time Texas had a new coach in a long time. And I feel like a lot of the ingredients are there. And I just wonder how long it's going to take Strong to actually, you know, turn that program around and get it to start winning again. I'm interested in Sarkisian at USC because the general consensus on Sarkisian is that he's only won, you know, 7 games. He won 8 games last year, and he's not that good. I think Sarkisian is better than his record at Washington has ever shown. And now that he's at USC, where he's going to be having an easier time getting top talent, that's going to show in the long run. And I think he's a better coach than Kiffin was as a head coach. So I think that'll improve USC. And the other one is, as the one we've all wanted to see, is the guy that's replacing Sarkisian at Washington, is Chris Peterson, finally left Boise State.
Yep.
Let's see if he could do it again.
I do not discredit Sark for that 7-8 win plateau when you consider two things. A, that what he inherited.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
Washington was horrible for like the better part of a decade before he showed up. It was in bad shape. And he did all that playing in a division that, while it doesn't get, you know, the national attention, is probably one of the toughest divisions in the country the last 5-6 years, with both Stanford and Oregon beating the hell out of everybody.
Stanford and Oregon have finished in the top 10 nationally in the coaches poll each of the last 3 years, and those are annual opponents for Washington. So, like, as Stanford and Oregon were building these juggernauts that we now assume are going to be some of the country's best teams every year, he was taking something that was absolutely in the dumpster and at least getting it to that next level of 7-8 wins.
Yeah, Dan Mullen goes to Mississippi State, wins 7 games a year in the SEC West, and it's like, wow, you know, this guy is doing an excellent job. He should be getting considered for a bigger job. Sarkisian basically does the same thing at Washington, same type of program, although, I mean, Washington had the national championship not too long ago, but still, in the same similar situation, two dominant teams in that division, and granted, it's not as strong top to bottom as the SEC West, but we discount it. So it's just funny, the national perception of things, how it changes the way people view coaches.
What's your thought on Brady Hoke, Doug Nussmeier, and sort of the state of Michigan football heading into the new Big Ten East, which is brutal? And, yeah. And you know, every year now is going to be one more year from that Sugar Bowl, which is awesome to start off the Brady Hoke era, but you go 8 wins, 7 wins, and looking at the talent there, looking at the reports from the spring, it's going to be an interesting season in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, Brady Hoke is getting near Charlie Weiss territory, in that if Michigan doesn't rebound this year, we're going to start hearing that, yeah, he got to the Sugar Bowl with Rich Rodriguez's players, which was when he heard about Charlie Weiss when he was at Notre Dame. He's doing it all with Ty Willingham's players. And once he got his own guys in there, things kind of started trending down. I think Michigan is going to rebound this year. I don't think it's going to be a 10-11 win kind of season. I think they'll definitely be better than they were last year. But, I mean,
the offensive line, I mean, I don't think the offensive line is going to be upgraded enough to be able to take advantage of, like, Derek Green and some good running backs and some, you know, Brady Hoke has gotten a couple good recruiting classes, a couple star, 5-star recruits. But it's still one of those things where you look at the entire picture and there's still hope-like pieces missing from that puzzle.
Yeah, and I think that Michigan could use some upgrades at, you know, some skill position spots.
Yeah.
Like, I think it could definitely use up, not to knock Devin Gardner, but I think, you know, there are better quarterbacks out there than Devin Gardner. There are better receivers than Michigan has, especially now that, you know, Jeremy Gallen's gone. While I think Funchess and Butt are good tight ends, I think Michigan could use a little more help at wide receiver now that Gallen's gone. Because, I mean, at times it felt like, you remember last year, it literally felt like Jeremy Gallen was the only wide receiver that Michigan had.
Well, that's why he had...
At least that's how Gardner treated
him. Yeah. That's what they had, like 500 yards receiving against Indiana.
Yeah, and it felt, you know, he was the only receiver that Gardner trusted, and I feel like there was a reason for that, because Michigan's talent elsewhere at the position just wasn't great. And I think Hoke has done a good job recruiting the offensive line. I think they've done a good job recruiting on defense, but I think what's killing him is the lack of skilled position players, which, oddly enough, is the one thing that Rich Rodriguez was pretty decent at doing.
Yeah, and that Wolverines defense should be strong. I feel good about that. You got, because Jake Ryan will be 100% healthy coming into the fall, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a better team. Whether I think it's going to be a 9-3 kind of team, but I don't know if that will be good enough for everybody there.
Let's see. Can't miss games. I threw on some easy ones. Opening weekend, you know, you're going to want to see the first game, Abilene Christian, Georgia State, Wednesday night. You'll be all about it.
How sad is that, though? I hate that. Not it's the first game of the year is Abilene Christian, Georgia State.
I mean,
I'm going to watch it. You're going to watch it. A lot of us are going to watch it. But couldn't it have been somebody else?
Yeah, I got it. I like it. It's I'm cool with it.
I'm not. I mean, I would give me just a big team at least. I mean, now granted, Georgia State might lose to Abilene Christian, so it could be an interesting game. But I yeah.
You would rather see, like, for example, LSU Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got LSU Wisconsin, Michigan.
You're not getting that game on a Wednesday though.
No. Michigan State at Oregon should be a lot of fun. Early season game in Eugene, sort of a test where I feel like, especially that early in the season, it's almost exciting if you're a Michigan State or an Oregon fan, because for the most part, especially with the college football playoff, either team could bounce back from a potential loss there and end up getting to the college football playoff.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting from the Oregon perspective, because you look at an Oregon team that its biggest problem in recent years has been Stanford, getting past a team like Stanford. And Michigan State is a very similar team to Stanford. So I think it'll also be a good test for Oregon, and it'll be a good indicator of whether the Ducks can win the Pac-12 North this year.
Anything else? What are those other games that you like, and are there any that I missed?
I couldn't tell you if there's any that you missed off the top of my head looking at this, but the ones that you do have, I find it very interesting and also very fitting that you have the Ohio State and Michigan State game listed on this list, but you didn't have the Ohio State Michigan game on there.
I think it's very relevant to the state of Big Ten football right now.
Yeah, I think that's very smart. You didn't cop out and just go with Ohio State Michigan because it's Ohio State Michigan. I think you picked the right game there.
I'm also putting that Penn State game as just trap city, because if there's, you know, you're enthusiastic James Franklin, let's get everybody hooting and hollering and pull off an upset, you give him an 8:00 primetime game late October. I mean, it's probably going to be a whiteout, so the entire stadium will look awesome on national television, and Franklin will have them fired up. Just ignoring all football X's and O's, but that's just sort of one of those games where I look at a schedule and I'm like, ooh, you better be on upset alert right then.
Yeah, there's been a lot of teams that went into Happy Valley on a Saturday night undefeated and lost.
The fun thing about looking at the schedule and trying to pick out the best games is that really makes football feel right around the corner for me. I start to almost literally start planning in my head which games I'm going to put on which televisions in my house.
I'm not quite there yet, but I get what you're saying.
What are you looking for just in general moving forward over the next month? I know we've got some abandoned developments. We'll have some general off-season chatter, but for the most part, things should be pretty quiet, right?
Yeah, I mean, generally, now that graduations have taken place and the students are actually out of school, it should get quiet. And usually the only news you hear during the June and July is the kind of news you don't want to hear.
The bad news, for sure.
Yeah, somebody's been arrested or somebody got hurt.
It's
there's generally nothing else over these next 2 months. So it's like I'd kind of just like to skip them.
If you have a player or team or coach that you really like that made the 100-day countdown, the 100 stories, names, games, teams, and more for 2014, then congratulations. That's the last bit of good news that you should get between now and like July.
Yeah, everything else, just get away from your computers and your television, except when you're reading us and listening to us.
On CBSSports.com.
Yeah. Then as soon as you're done reading, turn that crap off and go outside to avoid, and, you know, put your fingers in your ears and just be like, la, 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 la.
Yeah, go outside. Enjoy the sunshine. Hang out with your family.
Unless you live in Chicago.
Your family and friends. Hang out in the snow if you live in Chicago. and definitely enjoy the summertime. We will be continuing to provide some podcasts, checking in with you throughout the summer. We might even get to give you some extra previews. I know those will start really in July in earnest, but we will not be leaving you for too long. I guess, yeah, that's about all I've got on my radar. We got World Cup coverage coming up. I know Tom will be covering some of the World Cup for CBSSports.com. I'll be down at the U.S. Open, so we're going to be flexing our multi-sport muscles, Tom.
So I'm covering soccer and you're covering golf.
That's right.
What the hell has happened to us, Chip?
It's just, you know, we got to be flexible. We're trying to take after Jameis Winston, and we're trying to take after Jonathan Lloyd, the Oregon basketball player who's now using his last bit of eligibility to play football as a slot wide receiver. We see these players that we cover, and we're inspired by it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm saying that July and June can be pretty boring, and we're just trying to keep ourselves busy.
Also possible. Remember, follow Tom at Tom Fornelli. Follow me at Chip_Patterson. And you can follow at IonCFB, EYEONCFB, for all the latest college football coverage from CBSSports.com. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.